How many of you, I want to make sure, how many of you remember that that commercial from the 80s, the Wendy's commercial, Where's the Beef? I have it in here. Let's see if it works. Let's see. And do I have a mouse for this?
Yeah. People locked up so the cat won't steal it. They bore the man in the closet behind the curtain.
Yeah. The Wizard of Oz back in. He's got the mouse on a sponge. You're close. I don't. No. All right. We don't have the video clip. Sorry. But those of you who are...
We've all seen it.
Where is it? We've all seen the ad. Remember Clara Peller on the right? And they're talking about this big hamburger that has no beef in it. And she kept saying, where's the beef? Where's the beef? And it's really funny. It's one of the best ads ever. And I can't show it to you. So... It became a metaphor, remember, for anything that didn't have a substance to it. Where's the beef meant, where's your argument? Where's the substance to the argument? So what we're going to talk about this morning is regarding origin of life argument and speciation argument. In evolutionary theory, there's one feature that is not explained anywhere by the naturalists. This feature is avoided, it's ignored, it's glossed over. If you bring it up, they will attack you, not your argument. Most people, even the scientists and philosophers, don't understand its critical importance. Those that do know that there's no natural explanation for it. If you understand it and can articulate it, which is what we're going to do this morning, you will be able to say to a naturalist, where's the beef? Okay, so what is this holy grail, this unanswerable question, the biggest unexplained gap in all of evolutionary theory is...
Information.
What is the source of the information in the cell? Good, Mara, you read it before.
I thought you asked.
I did. Good job. That's right. All right. So, this is where we're headed. Now we're going to do some homework a little bit. Let's talk about some definitions. My brother said to me, don't just jump into this. Make sure you define some things. So we're going to take a few minutes and define stuff. So I have to turn the page, push the button on my computer, push the button on this computer, and we can get to it. Okay, when I'm talking about information, I'm not talking about sort of the casual sense that we mean, you know, what's the weather going to be like, and, you know, how many presidents have we had. That's information. But the information that I'm talking about is a stricter sense, that which is communicated by verbal, written, electronic symbols. Language, computer language. Okay? If there's an arbitrary symbol involved, that's what I'm talking about by information. Okay? Here's my definition that I sort of came up with, and you guys can argue with this and debate it if you want. Information, a symbol which by itself, or in conjunction with other symbols, and with a shared set of rules, in other words, everybody understands the rules, conveys meaning, intent, ideas, or causes an effect. Okay? Anybody have any?
Or causes an effect. That would include instructions, I guess.
That's right. Like a computer program will cause something to happen. Okay. Now, there is a word that is a way of describing an information-rich system. What is that word? Complexity. This is very important that you understand the strict definition of this word, because this word is bandied about. We all use it. Something is complex, but what does it really mean? The amount of information that it takes to describe something. Okay? So the more something is, the more complex something is, the more instructions it would take to define it. Or the amount of information that it takes to define it. Okay, if you have the number 143 repeated 1,000 times, that's not a complex system. That's one. If you program that into a computer, it says 143 repeat 1,000 times. That's not complex. So let's look at a couple of things that are not particularly complex. The stripes on the highway. Okay, put a 10-foot stripe every 10 feet forever. It's a very simple idea. Solar system bodies. Now, you may argue with this, but how many rules are there? How many pieces of information does it take to set up a solar system? If you were God and you could do it, you've got, what are the parameters that are necessary? Mass? Well, you've got the weight of things, the mass. Just for a solar system. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mass. Tell me if there's more than this. Mass.
Gravity.
Velocity. Gravitational constant. The distance the objects are from each other and from the sun. Do you need any more parameters than those four for setting up a solar system?
Any kind of solar system?
Yeah, just a random design yourself solar system. Okay, but those are the parameters. There's only five pieces maybe of information that you need to set that up. And that's why you've often heard Hugh say it, that physics and astronomy is what?
Simple
science. That's what he's talking about. It takes not so many pieces of information to get that going. Okay. Here's some pictures of some things that are not particularly complex, although they look complex. Crystals. Crystals are actually not, they're beautiful and they look complicated, but the number of instructions, the parameters in the natural world that it takes to produce a crystal is not a whole lot. Okay, let's look at a couple of others. Snowflake. It's beautiful, but it's not complex. Mara? Somebody tell me what the parameters are for a crystal.
No one knows.
Interatomic forces.
What's that?
Interatomic forces, electric forces.
Mm-hmm. Rich, you want to try that?
You know, a lot of them happen with evaporation. One of the ones I do for my kids is you just take a piece of charcoal and stick it in some salt water and you can grow beautiful crystals on it. So all it took was salt, water, and carbon, and you can grow your own crystals.
Right, so you're going to have the attraction.
It's a process of evaporation.
You're going to have the attractional forces between the elements in the crystal. You're going to have, in the case of a salt crystal, the rate at which it dries, probably the temperature, that kind of thing. Okay. Is that making more sense?
Yeah, and even like the snowflake, what do you need, frost? Or?
Well, you need the water molecule. And the forces that hold the water molecule together, and then the rate at which it will freeze, and the circumstances in the cloud. That's it.
I think there's a little bit more to it. That when you're talking about complexity, a number of instructions it takes to describe a crystal here, or go to the snowflake one.
A snowflake, okay.
Yeah. But that's a repetitious pattern.
Yes.
And so the pattern itself is where the instructions lie. So obviously, you have to have water, you have to have the conditions. And those are part of it, but the instructions, what would it take to replicate that? The water, and then you have, you know, six straight lines radiating at a particular distance, each of which has other straight lines. Yeah, outcropping at a certain angle, repeated in a certain pattern. And so you have repetitions, which is what makes it simpler than some very, very more complicated things like proteins.
That's correct. And the repetition is what makes it look appear complex when it's not necessarily. Okay? Jim?
Well, I've heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, or how anybody would know, but that there's no two snowflakes alike.
That's true.
So what is behind that that creates a different one? So many trillions of different...
Because they are extremely sensitive to the initial conditions of when they form, the exact temperature. Maybe there's some wind velocity involved, how the rate at which the temperature is falling, the moisture in the air, that kind of thing.
Well, even ones that are right next to each other, but they're different.
Right, it's like fingerprints. You know, why are all fingerprints different?
Well,
it's the same kind of question.
Complex?
No, it's not complex in the sense that it takes a lot of instructions to define it. It's orderly. And we're going to get to the difference, because that's one of the main issues in my talk. I want to talk about the difference between order and complexity, because this is where we can really critique the naturalist model.
Yeah,
okay.
Because he also, like Q, talked about, we haven't found a twin of our sun, you know, and that doesn't make our sun complex. It's just unique.
Right.
Between complexity.
Now, this next one is a really good example of something that is extremely simple and yet appears very, very complex. And it's such a good example that I am going to try to play it on the computer and turn the computer around and let you see the little screen, because it's amazing. Does anybody know what this is?
Fractal.
It's a fractal. What fractal in particular? It's called a Mandelbrot set. And a Benoit Mandelbrot was a guy who developed this. This is a very simple mathematical formula that defines this shape, but when you plug the formula into a computer and let it play, it infinitely regresses. You can, and that's what I want to see if it'll do. Let's can we play it, Scott? Yep, it's playing. Okay, everybody, look as much as you can. It's just going to get bigger, and as it focuses in on one point of the set, you see more and more detail. And as it focuses deeper, it's more and more detail. It never ends. It goes forever if you had the computing power to figure it out. Can everybody see what it's doing? It's getting closer and closer and closer, and you would think at some point you would see the end of it. You would see the ultimate detail of it. But it's not. It's just going deeper and deeper and deeper, and you can look as far, as deep as you want with whatever computing power you have. You're never going to see the bottom of the Mandelbrot set. If you go online and try to find them, they're really fascinating. It's just sort of a mathematical oddity. If you study fractals, I called him and he developed it for my talk this morning. Okay. But it looks, Alan?
When was this, the man's name is
Benoit Mandelbrot. Benoit.
When did he create
this? In the 80s.
Did he have a lot of time on his hands?
Yeah, he must have.
Rob, it's a quick example. We actually use this formula in one of the machines that we make in Hollywood. We make a graphics box, and one of the things that we wanted to do was, when people made cities, was to make mountains, you know, in the background of a city for the graphics. And, of course, originally we were trying to just draw the mountains, and, of course, that just took forever to make all of the hills and the valleys, the peaks or whatever. We found out by using a fractal program we could create all these complex mountains with a little team formula.
They looked complex then.
They looked complex.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful because everybody thought we'd come up with these complex mountains when in reality it was just a
fractal. Okay, so my point is that this is not a complex. It looks really complex. John?
Well,
for me to understand, this is a portrayal of solutions to a fairly simple equation.
Right. And here's the equation. What kind of equation would you think it would take to produce that? Now, this equation got completely messed up in the PowerPoint problems, but you can sort of see it. You don't have to understand the equation, just understand that it's really simple.
It's just an equation.
It's just an equation. Oh, there it is. Okay. There's only a few factors in that equation, okay? It's very fuzzy. Yeah, sorry.
Can you read it to us so we understand it better?
I can read it to you. I don't know how well you'll understand it, but it's two. This is a 2 and an n plus 1 equals 2 squared with n below plus c. That's the whole formula for that. Oh, I get it. Actually have another one that works. I'm going to let you guys see these on. I don't think they're going to work on here. Okay. I want to show you how many people have ever put together an IKEA piece of furniture. How many people wanted to put a gun to your head after you did that? Okay. Think of this video in terms of how many instructions did it take to put the piece of furniture together. Okay? I found online a sped up version of a IKEA furniture construction. I tried to count the number of steps, so let's take a look at it on my.
Oh, they have a TV show with people competing to put those together. It's hilarious.
Yeah, okay. All right. No, it's not going to do it. All right, there. So here we go. Who can see it? Okay. It's basically a guy working really fast, putting an IKEA piece of furniture together. There's one frame, it's pretty funny, he's laying down on the floor in the middle of it. Yeah, I sort of estimated it, because I just did one about 3 weeks ago, and that's why I wanted to find this. Because I was frustrated. Okay. So now that you... I'm going to have a little exercise for you.
Is that complex or not complex?
You tell me.
Somewhat complex.
Yeah. Now, I have a little exercise for the class. And I'm not sure I have a perfect answer for this, okay? So just throw out ideas. Here's what I want you to do. Put these things in order of complexity. Automobile, human brain, a toaster, Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, federal tax code.
The only thing above a human brain.
That's right. Living things, 747, hydrogen molecule, Microsoft Word, laptop computer, bacterial cell, and the, I don't know how I lost it, but the entire universe minus the living world. Minus living things. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Okay. You mean most complex?
Yeah.
Is it more complex than a human brain?
Well, are you including all the cells in a human brain?
Yes, I'm including all the cells in a human brain.
Is it a female
thing or a male thing? You know, I was really tempted to go there with this, but I knew somebody else would be the patsy for that joke. Yeah.
I'd say the bacterial flagellum is more than any of those.
More than the human brain?
No.
Okay, so what's the most complex thing on the list?
Human brain.
Everybody agrees except for Mara.
Yep.
Okay. What's the next
one? Microsoft Word.
What's the next most complex thing?
Bacteria.
I would agree with that. What's the next most complex thing?
Probably the universe.
No, it's 740.
There's over 1,000.
What do you think, Rich?
Probably a hydrogen molecule.
No.
Now I have a vote for Beethoven's fifth. What's the third? Think of, remember, what's the definition of something that's complex? What's that? The number of instructions it would take to build it. I'm tending to agree with Rich. I think the next one is the laptop. But okay, keep going. What's next?
Now, I would say the 747 jet has multiple computers in it, so it is more complex than a laptop. 747 computer has
computers
in it. Also, so you can't compare one computer to something that has, you know, five or six or seven.
Fair enough.
An automobile is rather vague because there are those that are extremely simple and those that are extremely complex.
That's true.
The maximum one.
If you go to the Model T, it's quite simple.
That's true.
You get a brand new car with all the computers inside of it.
That's true. Okay.
You think of an engine. I mean, I don't know what you count as instructions, but imagine the engineering instructions that had to go into that.
If you knew nothing...
The simplest automobile engine.
If you knew nothing at all about an automobile, and somebody had to write a set of instructions for you to make one, assuming you had the ability to, just assume that. You know, you can machine it or do whatever you need to. How many instructions would it take to tell somebody how to build a car?
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Tens of thousands? Maybe 100,000? Okay. You notice... Okay, what are some of the lower complexity things on this list?
Well, you mean how it works or how it's made?
How many instructions does it take to define it? How many instructions would it take to tell somebody how to build it? Or
it's somewhat complex.
Since a toaster is comprised of a whole lot of molecules, a molecule's got to be simpler than a toaster. Okay?
Those molecules are not alive.
I'm not saying anything about life. I'm just talking about the number of instructions, okay, the amount of information it takes to define something.
Well, the bacterial cell and the human brain
are the most complex.
Are alive.
You keep going to life. I'm not there yet. I'm talking about complexity. Okay. You notice one thing on the list. The entire universe minus living things. How complex is that? Here's a really interesting question, and I'm not sure I know the answer to it. Is a toaster more complex than the entire universe minus living things and what man has produced?
The entire universe includes all the fine-tuning, all the teleology.
And how many are there? How many fine-tuned parameters are there? Well, how many do we know of? Okay.
Are there all operating a toaster too?
Right. Are there more than 1,000 instructions for to build a toaster?
I don't.
Yes, there are.
I would think so. Yes.
Are you discounting what it would take to make the sun? Instructions to make the sun or to make Jupiter? I mean, they're each different.
Right, but...
I think... He was made the point that the sun is about the simplest thing there is.
That's right.
And it's so predictable because it's so simple.
That's right.
And this is a very good comparison. I think the toaster is much more complex than the entire universe, minus the living things.
Well, does it depend... I mean, do you say, go take the metal, or do you say... How do I make the metal?
Right.
Yeah. It depends where you start.
It does depend on where you start. And the reason I'm doing this is so we can struggle with these ideas, because this is not a cut and dried thing. I want you guys to struggle with where I'm going here. Try to understand what it is I'm talking about. How many instructions would it take? And part of the answer to that is how far back do you go? You know, if you're putting the IKEA piece of furniture together, you know, the pieces are already built. they're already drilled, they're painted, the little metal clips are already machined. If you were starting at the molecular level and saying how many steps would it take to put that IKEA piece of furniture together, it's a whole lot more, right?
Build a tree.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And also Beethoven Fifth Symphony, you have all the instruments, different instruments.
That's right.
And that's
you've got a note for every instrument. You've got all the multiplied by the different instruments. There's timing in there. There's volume, and then there's all the things that are hard to give an instruction for, which have to do with the artistic rendering of it. But it is. But there's a lot of information in a piece of music. Look at the music written on a piece of paper. That's right. That's right. So it's a very, very much information in a piece of music, especially a symphony. Okay. All right, so we kind of are agreed on what's high, what's middle, and what's low. Does anybody else want to say anything more about this list?
Federal tax bill's got to be way up there.
Yeah. And it's getting bigger, yes. It's getting more and more complex. Okay.
Democrats don't like to stop taxing.
That's right. Okay, there's a couple of different kinds of information. There's direct information, which has to do with symbols, alphabet, computer code, language, skywriting, anything where it's written using some kind of alphabet or code. Okay, everybody understand that? Then there's a more indirect one. And I couldn't find a name for it. I called it embedded, where the information is part of the structure of the system. A really good example is a key. You put the key in the lock. I think we'd all agree that the notches in the key represent some kind of information.
Can you put the previous slide on one of the screens?
No. My program does not have enough information to be able to do that.
Can you go back or maybe back and forth?
Yeah.
That we need to go forward because you are limited time.
Yeah. This one is the way we normally think of information: codes, language, computer code, alphabet, spoken language. Where it has symbols that represent the language. Then the other one is something that's embedded. Imagine I'm a builder, so I use the footing of a house. When you're building a house, you build the concrete footing around the perimeter of the house, and you have to make sure that the plumbing comes up in the right place, the electrical comes up in the right place, everything is where it should be. If you don't, you build the house and the toilet winds up in the bedroom, or you know, the sink is in the closet. So that's information that's I didn't build it, so setting a table sounds like an easy thing, but when you have a dinner party, you have 20 people, you set the table, you put the plates and all of the utensils where you want the people to sit. There's information in that. Okay, you don't put them all over on one end of the table. You spread them out. Okay. Now, there's one more definition that I want to do here, and it's now specified complexity. There are some systems which can be complex, but they're not highly specific. Look at the definition of a meadow. Okay, a meadow. What's a meadow? Somebody tell me what a meadow is. It's a grassy expanse in the middle of something else, a forest. What size is it? Could be any size. What kind of grass is it? Could be any kind of grass. Is it level? Is it level? It might be level. It might not. Does it have a river running through it? Maybe. Maybe not. Now look at a football field. That's much more specific. It's 100 yards long. It's, I think, 53 yards wide. It has to be particularly, it has to be level within a couple of inches. It has to have usually a particular kind of grass.
So it has to absorb blood.
It has to, yes. Oh, and it also has to be surrounded by drunk people. Yeah, okay. Okay. Everybody understand the difference here? Okay, let's look at some things that are less specified. A Christmas tree. Okay? You take a tree that's sort of this shape. Well, how high does it have to be? High as you want it. What do you put on it?
Anything.
Pretty much anything you want. Put some presents under it, it's a Christmas tree. You could have a palm tree that's a Christmas tree if you called it a Christmas tree. It's not highly specific. Front yard. You can have a front yard. How big is it? What's in your front yard? Whatever you want. Just look at some people's front yards. Yeah, okay, you get the idea. I'm not going to use that sentence because it doesn't work. Okay, here's some things that are more highly specified. Your bank balance. Change one digit and what happens? You're still broke, but yeah. Okay. Legal contract, PIN number, a lock combination. Those are things that have to be very precise to be able to work. So they're complex and they're specified. They're specified complexity. All right. Here's an example of something that is fairly specific. You can waver from this pretty much. Okay. Basic cake recipe. You've got butter, sugar, egg, milk, flour, baking powder, teaspoon, salt, vanilla. Okay, now what if you changed it to this? This is a little less specific, okay? Yeah. How's that going to come out? Yeah. Okay, you get the idea. There's some specificity that has to be there for this thing to work. All right. In a warm place for a while. Okay. Good. I want to talk about something called the law of conservation of information. We've all heard about the conservation of energy, but this is also a lesser known law. Here's what it says. It sounds complicated, but we're going to go through some examples because it's actually fairly intuitive. No system can output more information than is input to it plus what's already programmed into it. Okay? In other words, the output is equal to or less than the input plus what's programmed into it. Sounds kind of technical. All it's saying is the system can't make up information, functional information. Specified information. Let's look at a couple of examples. A computer can't make up the Gettysburg Address. A cat can't talk. It doesn't have the programming to be able to do this. A radio can't play a song without the song being embedded in the radio signal. The only information that it puts out is what's being put into it. Okay? A computer design program can't choose the style of the sofa or the color of the carpet without you entering it. Now, there could be a randomizer in there that chose those things, but then that's part of the programming, and that's embedded in the computer already. Okay? A computer program can't create a new version of itself. I'm going to use this later. This is key. This has to do with changing species. Okay? A book can't write its own second edition. A cell phone can't make up your new friend's phone number. You have to put it in. You can't say to your friend, don't give me your phone number, I'll guess at it. Okay? A security camera system cannot make up a picture of a person committing a crime. This is so intuitive. Think about this. Okay? Some guy's robbing the 7-Eleven, and the police go pick him up, and they arrest him, and he says, what are you arresting me for? And they say, we got you on camera, you robbed the 7-Eleven. Now, he may have 117 excuses, but one excuse that's never been used in the history of the world is the camera made that picture up. It wasn't me. Now, why would nobody even think to make that up? Because this is such an intuitive idea, the idea that a system cannot make up functional information. Everybody getting the idea of this? Okay.
So, Ross, we're on the edge of this artificial intelligence thing, and did you have anything to say about that? You know, the people who are working on artificial intelligence would love to argue with you. They can't yet, but they think, you know, in 10 or 20 years they can.
I don't think they'll be able to.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll argue with them. I'd love to.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's another question for the class. Where does information come from? Where does functional, specific information come from originally? Now, does a computer output information?
Yes.
Certainly, all the time. Where did it come from? And sometimes that input into the computer is from another computer, right? Where did that information come from? Take it all the way back. Where did the information come from? Warren?
An intelligent source.
An intelligent source. Human beings. Is there any source of information that didn't come from an intelligence? Ultimately. Can anybody name one? Can you think of any? Come on, talk to me.
The devil.
The devil. But the devil is a conscious thinking entity. Okay.
A rock. But then you have to figure where that comes from, but to make the rock.
That's right. So what is the ultimate source of information?
The encyclopedia.
And who wrote the encyclopedia?
Man.
Okay. So this is one of my main points here. The ultimate source of any information is a conscious mind. The beginning source. Okay? Remember this, because this is key. How does any system make up information that wasn't input into it already? My argument here, and what I'm trying to say this morning, is it cannot under any circumstances.
That's really the main point of Buzz Rana's creating life in the lab.
That's right. Okay. Now, let's go into this argument a little bit. Why information cannot come from a random source? If you try to produce information from a random source, what are you going to get? You're going to get a random output. It's just going to be gibberish. Now, what if you get information from a source that's somehow governed by natural law? In other words, just the laws of nature produce these symbols. You're always going to get the same symbol when the circumstances are the same. So you're going to get some kind of repetitive pattern. This is really important. Think about when let's say you're writing something on a computer and you're typing the words in. You started typing, and the very next letter that you're putting in, is there anything in the natural world or any random process going on that is controlling what the next letter is going to be that you're going to put in? But it's in your mind. It's not. There's no effects from nature. There's no random processes that's telling you what to put in next. This is why this information argument is so fundamentally impossible for a naturalist to get through, is because functional information requires that when the codes are put in, any character can be inserted with equal probability. And there is no natural process that can allow for that.
Naturalism inevitably leads to determinism.
That's right.
And determinism says that you did not decide to hit that key on the typewriter or on the keyboard.
That's right. So if you put a monkey at the keyboard, you're going to get a random.
Now, it's just that all your past experiences come together at that point, and there is no rationality involved. Now, it's an untenable position, but that's determinism.
Right. As I'm speaking these words, as you're thinking about them, I'm choosing my words to convey the meaning that I'm trying to get across. Okay? There is nothing that's controlling what it is that I'm saying. I'm choosing those words because they convey the meaning.
Only if you're a non-atheist.
If, well, I think it's true whether you're an atheist or not.
If you're an atheist, everything is determined.
Right, but you, how do you get functional information from a deterministic system?
You don't.
You cannot. Okay, that's the argument.
It's amazing we made it to the moon.
Yeah, it's amazing we make it out our front door sometimes. Only a conscious mind can create original information. This is one of my main points. Okay. Let's now go over to biology. We're talking about the complexity of a cell. I've really struggled with these numbers, and if they're wrong, too bad. Okay, complexity of a cell. This is a bacterial cell. A human cell has a lot more atoms, but that number is a billion. Okay? Millions of moving parts, thousands of systems, millions of characters in the DNA. The DNA functions just like an alphabet. Okay? I don't like using the big numbers. I don't like all the 10 to whatever. This is the only time I'm going to do it so you get a sense of how big this is. So, let's talk about the complexity of a cell. How many instructions would it take to build a cell one atom at a time? Okay? So here we go. If an IKEA piece of furniture takes 2 minutes per step, times 60 steps, which is about 2 hours, and we take that same rate to build a cell one atom at a time, and we all took it on as a class project, okay, and we worked on it 24/7, we could finish it in only 27,000 years. 28. You've got to have some vacation in there. Okay. So, even...
That's just a mechanic.
That's right. That's right.
It's not designing the program.
But...
Exactly right.
Structure set.
It can't be made simpler. So, this is an unbelievably complex thing, and the fact that it's so tiny that we can't see it is sort of ironic because we don't understand, we don't really get the complexity. I have one of those videos.
RNA is to carry the
Just look at it for a minute.
From the DNA out of the nucleus to a ribosome for production of the particular proteins that this gene codes for.
This is one of those ones similar to what Mark played a couple of weeks ago. There's 1,000 of them online.
These complex catalytic machines use the mRNA copy of the genetic information to assemble amino acid building blocks into the three-dimensional proteins that are essential for life. Let's see how it works.
Okay, you get the idea.
The ribosome is...
So what's the main feature that distinguishes a designed system from one made by random processes or natural law? Complexity. Okay, in everything we know of, if it's complex, if it takes a lot of instructions to build it, it came from a mind to do it. A toaster, a 747, a laptop, federal tax code. It may have been a warped mind, but it did take a mind to produce that. Now, biological systems are loaded with complexity and specified information on every level. Okay? Even naturalists understand this. This is an amazing quote. The problem of the origin of life is clearly basically equivalent to the problem of the origin of biological information. Even they understand this is a very difficult problem. Biology has become an information processing science. So here's my conclusion that I want to make. I've got more to say, but this is basically where I'm going. Therefore, using the principle of abductive logic, it's reasonable to argue that the only source for the information in biological systems is an intelligent reasoning source. Okay? and the only intelligent reasoning source with the power and creativity to actually create living things from the non-living is a being that fits the classical description of God. Information doesn't come from anywhere other than a conscious mind. So, give me a minute here. One of the great attractions of Darwin's theory of evolution was that in the mind of many scientists, it did away with the need for a creator. In truth, it never did that, because he never was able to account for the complexity, and no one has. We are facing a world of biology infinitely more complex than Darwin could have imagined, and the naturalist's arguments are less effective than when Darwin lived, and getting weaker every day. I think it's John that says, if Darwin was alive today, he would not be a Darwinist. Now,
I think Hugh Ross keeps saying the origin of life conferences get more depressing every year.
That's right. So how do we critique the paradigm? Warren, this is the part I want you to hear, because we were talking about this. First of all, there's a description. There's a confusion between order and complexity. In many ways, they are opposites. Okay, natural systems can account for some level of order. The crystals, the snowflakes, things that are repetitive, but not the complexity. And John?
This is probably a footnote. The side of a mountain, all the patterns exist.
Mm-hmm.
They are complex, or they can be complex. All the blocks spewing all over.
No, I don't agree that they're complex.
The pattern, if there is a pattern, could be somewhat complex, but there's no conveyance of information.
There's no conveyance of information. But I would argue then that they're not complex. If you took a bunch of random colored rocks of different size and shook it up, you put it in a bucket or something and shake them up and throw them out on the floor, you're probably going to see some patterns and stuff in there. But there was almost no information. It was pick up rocks, put in bucket, shake, throw on floor. That's the list of instructions that it took to do that. And the natural world has a lot of things like that that look complex, but they were just sort of a random mix-up of stuff.
Sort of compare that to Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. Here's where you want to become an attorney. Ted?
Why don't we consider the loss of information? Take a living creature, put it through a meat grinder. It weighs the same, looks the same.
That's right.
It's got the same molecular count, but a lot of information's been there.
That's right, it has.
Now take the material that's been reduced to this mesh, or mass, and burn it, and reduce it down to its molecules. More information's been lost.
That's right. You can lose.
Put a real living animal next to the one you just did this to. Information's been lost, sir.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. Okay. This is really important because I want to teach you how. Just hang on a second, Mara. I want to teach you how to be an attorney and read this stuff very carefully when you start reading about evolution. And we're going to go through a couple of these, because even the best scientists confuse order and complexity. And they are opposite. Again, natural systems can account for some level of order, but not for complexity. And they will say, well, look, there's patterns here. There's order in these systems. So, of course, life could come about. And you say, wait a minute. Wait, where's the beef? Where did the information come from? Okay? When addressing an argument for naturalistic explanation of the origin of life, look for their explanation for the origin of the information. They will. It will fall into three categories. They will ignore it. They will confuse it with order or pattern. They will invoke a process which is indistinguishable from magic. This is where you, this is where you ask, well, I had a nice Columbo quote too. where he says, something just doesn't add up here. And then... And then...
He also say, I'm sorry, I'm bothering.
That's right. And then... Clara Peller says, where's the beef?
But,
oh, wait a minute. Wait. I got to do this. This is so good. Okay, here we go. You ready?
One more.
Yeah, one more thing. Okay. Ready?
Yeah. Well, that don't add up.
You got a problem with that?
Something's missing here. Hey, where's the beef? I don't think there's a good thing done.
Okay. Not yet.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yes, Mara. Yes, it does, and I'm gonna try to go there.
That's gonna be the last question.
That's fine, but here's some. I just went online and looked at a bunch of evolutionary websites, and you know they all start with like a paragraph or two about how evolution works. And remember, I just did. Which of the three categories do these fall into? This is my favorite one. This is Jerry Coyne. And he says, life on Earth evolved gradually, beginning with one primitive species, perhaps a self-replicating molecule, that lived more than 3.5 billion years ago. It then branched out over time, throwing off many new and diverse species, and the mechanism for most, but not all, of evolutionary change is natural selection. Doesn't that sound an awful lot like a fairy tale? I mean, let's reword that. Once upon a time, 3.5 billion years ago, a self-replicating molecule was born. Okay? There's no detail in here. There's no accounting for the information. Where did the information come from? You just pound them on that. Where did the information come from?
Hugh Ross calls it fancy.
That's right. Here's another one. And biologists have identified and investigated mechanisms that can explain the major patterns of change.
It's patterns,
isn't it? Where's the complexity? Where's the information? Now, this argument works not only for the origin of life, because it's such a huge jump, all that information that needed to come into existence at one time, but I think it also works for whenever a new... thing is created, the eyeball. The eyeball, imagine the amount of information it needed to be inputted into the DNA to create an eyeball. Where did that information come from? We know it doesn't come from a random source. We know it doesn't come from a law-like source. The best argument, the best explanation is a mind, a conscious mind. So I think this argument works not only for origin of life, but also the larger changes. You okay, Warren?
Yeah.
Whenever a new form comes in, and I think we can argue about, you know, can a finch's beak grow longer to get the food that's deeper in the hole? Sure, I think it can, but I think it's because the information that it needs to do that is already in the DNA. Can there be some transmutation of one species to another? Sure, if the information is in the DNA to support it, but can an amoeba grow, grow a flagellum with all the complexity in that flagellum if it doesn't already have one? How much information would it take to create the motor, the sensory apparatus that's needed, the tail? You know, the cat can't talk. Where did the information come from? That's the question you keep asking. And if you look at these, you know, let's do one more. We got about 2 minutes. Here's another one that talks about well-supported mechanistic framework. Great. Where's the information? Here's one. So enormous and ramifying and consistent has the evidence for evolution become that if anyone could now disprove it, I should have my conception of the orderliness of the universe overthrown. Where's the information? He talks about order. That's fine. But where's the information? Warren?
Linux called this mechanism versus agency.
Very good. Yes.
Agency.
Through the process of descent with modification, the common ancestor of life on Earth gave rise to the fantastic diversity that we see documented in the fossil record and around us today. Oh yeah? How? Where'd the information come from? All right, I like 2 minutes. Don't ask me a long question because Dave won't let me. But tell me what you've heard. What has stuck with you in this?
Complexity is not the same thing as patterns or order.
That's right, and they're opposite in many ways.
I would say that a forensic geologist or even a researcher would argue that there's a tremendous amount of complexity in the geological record, including solar cycles, paleontology, asteroid events, all kinds of things layered in.
But they may be a result of a simpler system. They may just look complex.
Okay, they're also inactive
compared
to a cell, compared to a motor in a cell. Not even
could all those things be defined by a simple set of instructions? And I think so. Even though they look complex. What else? What have you guys heard? Mara?
When I talk to people, I'm a little more sarcastic. I'm going to start all of them when they said, once upon a time, about 3.5 billion years ago, a self-replicating cell happened, and it all came into this. I love it.
Yeah, you ask him where's Tinkerbell in this story. Right. Okay,
right.
One more.
I think what you said about the consciousness is the bottom line, because what we perceive as consciousness cannot exist without a being, without a beginning and return. What do you do with it? I mean, how do you put it back in the bottom? Consciousness itself, we all live and die, and but yet we have consciousness, but we're in the world. The ability for that comfort.
Thank you. Alan?
I hate to be the devil's advocate again, but does this sound like a fairy tale? Once upon a time, about 14.5 billion years ago, God said, let there be a universe. And he created the universe.
Yeah, I don't think so, because
we have scientific evidence to prove that.
Yeah, I think the evidence is there that, and for a being who exists outside of time, that's always been there, the classical arguments don't work. You can't say, if God created the universe, who created God? It's a nonsensical question. Dave?
The important one I was going to bring up, evolution, the two words they'll always use is natural selection and mutation. The problem, obviously, is all the scientific evidence has shown that natural selection can change something slightly, but it can't create something new. And all the evidence proves that mutations drive species extinct. It doesn't create new features and new functions. And so they keep bringing up natural selection and mutation. And once you show them the evidence and realize, obviously, that those things can't produce an eye, they can't produce a new species, they're already falling apart.
And why can't they?
The natural selection, once again, is just modifying information that's there. It's not making new information.
That's right.
And mutations is destroying information, not creating new information.
That's right. Scott?
I was just going to answer the other fairy tale. If you've eliminated all of these answers, then only one can be.
Well, that's the power of abductive logic, which is what we all use every day, inferring from the best explanation. The naturalist arguments are weak, and they're getting weaker. It looks, my bottom line is, it looks designed because it is designed. I mean, it's really that simple. The analogy of design, everything that we produce, that we know of, that we can make, okay, we know it has a look, it has a lot of information content. Specified embedded information. Then all of a sudden there's the cell that has more of that than anything we can ever create. So the evidence for it also being created is stronger than for the things that we've created. And yet we're supposed to believe it came about by itself. Okay, that's my talk. I want to say one thing. If you applaud for my brother, because he helped me put the PowerPoint together, and I really appreciate it. And also, a really good conversation I had with Rich Dean that helped me on this. So, thank you, everybody.
Well,
Lord, how exciting it is to be able to explore the things that you've already designed and created for us. It's sort of like an Easter egg hunt. We get to wander around and pick things up and figure out how they work and then just be absolutely delighted in you and your creation. We thank you so much. Pray for Hugh as he is gone, and bless each one of us as we go our way this afternoon.